Well, I hope you're ready for today's Brighteon Broadcast News. It's Monday, August 14th, 2023. I'm Mike Adams, of course. Thank you for joining me today. Let me give you nine things we're going to cover here, a little table of contents right up front. Number one, genetically engineered vaccines in animal products that are even labeled organic. That's right. Yeah, we're going to talk about how do you know organic products don't have mRNA vaccines administered to the animals? And what about non-organic products? Who's getting injected with all these well, I guess you can't call them transhumanism, transbovinism vaccines? We'll talk about that. That's number one. Point number two, I interviewed Andy Scheckman on Friday as part of our Decentralized TV show. And the interview was so powerful that I've got to share a substantial part of it with you today. Andy Scheckman, the CEO of Miles Franklin, with a major warning about what's coming financially with the dollar currency, with the BRICS meeting that's happening August 22nd. That's not far away. So we'll talk about that, and I'll play some of that interview for you. Point number three, I've got some comments about this new popular song called Richmond, North of Richmond by Oliver Anthony. It's been going crazy over the weekend. It's the number one song on iTunes right now. Why is that? And what does it mean about America and our people waking up? Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk about that. Point number four, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny just had her medical license yanked by the medical board of her state. I think that's Ohio, but we'll double check that when we get into that. And of course, completely without due process, totally bogus, made up reasons. Basically, they yanked her medical license, or at least suspended it at the moment, simply because she's telling the truth. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. I've been in touch with Dr. Tenpenny, and she's going to come on the show as soon as we can get an open spot here set up with her. So that's number four. Point number five, Bill Holter, who I've had as a guest several times. He was on with Greg Hunter at USA Watchdog over the weekend. And he's got a Mad Max warning for society. He says things are about to break down into a Mad Max scenario in many areas. So we'll cover that. Point number six is James Rickards did an interview where he really explained what's happening with the BRICS new global currency and how it's going to be backed by the mass of gold. It's not backed by gold. It's not redeemable for gold, but the value of the BRICS currency is pegged to the grams of gold. And it's a brilliant innovation on the part of Russia and China, by the way, that's going to make the dollar obsolete, and it's going to collapse the U.S. empire. And James Rickards explains why. I'll get into some of that. Point number seven, speaking of China, they have a laser weapons breakthrough now that can dump heat out of the laser generation process in real time with such efficiency that they can now fire military lasers that are always on. They don't have to cycle them on and off at any kind of, hertz or frequency. They don't have to fire them for, 1/10 of a second and then let them cool for 10 seconds. No, they can just fire it and keep it firing the whole time. That's a game changer in terms of global military weaponry, and we'll talk about that. Hopefully, gosh, this is going to be a long podcast. Point number eight. Biden has announced a new $40 billion emergency housing program just for illegals. So remember last week I was talking about how they're building cities in the United States for the illegal invaders. And sure enough, another $40 billion is being requested for that purpose. At the same time that the American people, the middle class is getting crushed, people are becoming homeless. So there's no money for Americans, of course. No money for our border, for our veterans, no money for our homeless. But there's plenty of money for illegals to come in and have free cities built for you. That's the Biden regime, and this is starting to piss me off, actually, how insane this is, that this is going on. The treason that is happening at the highest levels in this country is just outrageous. And then, by the way, point number nine, Biden also just announced a new terraforming operation to suck the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere with even more money being funded into that operation, because of course they can just print money. And, you know, whereas you and I have to earn money. Well, you know, the rich men north of Richmond, right? The D.C. treasonous traitors, all they do is they just print money. They don't have to work a day. They print money and then they use it to destroy our country, which is kind of what Oliver Anthony is singing about, come to think of it. So those are the 9 points that I'm going to try to cover today, and maybe a little more in between. But you know what? Let's actually start with just about a minute of that song from Oliver Anthony, Rich Men North of Richmond. I'm going to play about a minute for you just so you can get a flavor if you haven't heard this. The lyrics, there's a little profanity. I'm not going to bleep it out. So just a little bit of profanity in there, but it's very appropriate in this context. But give a listen to this song and understand this is resonating with the American people right now. So check this out.
I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay, so I can sit out here and waste my life away, drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me, people like you. Wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. All it is, living in the new world with an whole soul. These rich men north of Richmond, Lord knows they all just wanna have total control. Wanna know what you think, wanna know what you do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, 'cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end.
So there you go, the first minute from Oliver Anthony, Rich Men North of Richmond. And again, culturally, his words really resonate with a lot of Americans right now who are finding themselves penniless. The middle class is being utterly decimated in this country because of the policies of Joe Biden and the central bank. Which, by the way, Trump is not immune to accusations on this either, because under Trump, of course, there was a whole lot of money printing going on. It's just that it's even more under Biden. And it's a total blowout scenario. The middle class is going to be absolutely crushed. But let's talk about this for a second, Oliver Anthony. First of all, just for him as an individual, this sudden burst of overnight fame, it's going to be very difficult. Difficult for anybody to deal with. But this man who has, I think, a powerful message, almost pleading with the corrupt leaders to stop being so damn corrupt, he's suddenly going to become rich and famous himself. And he's going to have all kinds of pressures on him to join the satanic, demonic cult of the music industry, especially the country western music, which is mostly infiltrated by Satanism as well, and all kinds of corporate interests and profit interests and so on. So anytime somebody starts to become an influencer, they are either going to be turned to the dark side or attacked and defamed. And right now, I would imagine what's happening to Oliver Anthony is he's being contacted by agents, and these agents are going to represent the evil cabal, and they're going to say the following. They're going to say, "Hey, Oliver, woo, you got a lot of musical genius there, son. And what we're going to do is we're going to make you famous and rich, and you're going to be super successful, and you're going to live a lifestyle of a billionaire. And all you got to do now is, for your next album, you got to start singing songs with the messages that we give you. Like, you got to say that transgenderism is all good, and you got to mutilate children, but we won't say it exactly that way. We'll just call it inclusiveness and love wins and all this. And you got to start singing about climate change now. You got to have your tune. 'Cause the climate's going to kill us, and it's going to be bad. And it's going to, you're going to have to do whatever we tell you, and then you're going to be rich and famous, right? Now, I don't know Oliver Anthony. Had never heard of him until 2 days ago. And most of America is in the same boat. But maybe Oliver Anthony is going to say, hey, go pound sand, you globalists, okay? And in that case, then they're going to do a bunch of defamation on him. Oh, this racist white man from wherever he is. Does he live in Virginia? This racist farmer, rural, you know, right winger. And they're going to try to just throw him under the bus and destroy his reputation as much as possible. So if anybody out there knows Oliver Anthony, give him a heads up that this is what's coming. You either agree to join the dark side, in which case you sell your soul to the devil, literally, or they're going to absolutely destroy you. And that's going to be the decision that he's going to have to make, even as he becomes very well known and probably very wealthy from the sales of his songs and so on. But anyway, to the message that he was saying, when I hear this, I think that what he is singing about is kind of the pleading of the oblivious American who doesn't know. I'm not saying he is, he knows what's up, but he's kind of singing on behalf of the oblivious American who doesn't understand, why are we getting poorer? Why is our dollar losing value? Why are taxes rising, an increasing tax burden? Why can't we afford to buy food? Why can't we afford to pay rent, and so on? And I think Oliver Anthony knows the answers to this, although it wasn't in his song, but the answer is the Federal Reserve. Central banks are the source of so much evil. It's the money printing that's making Americans poor. It's the endless money printing. And every time Joe Biden wants to do some other crazy, stupid thing, oh, let's have $40 billion to build cities for illegal invaders. Well, where does that $40 billion come from? It comes from printing money. And as I said earlier, you know, you and I have to earn our money. We have to work for it. The government just prints it. They dishonestly create money from nothing. It is a dishonest system. Again, you have to work for it. They just create it out of nothing, which steals from you. It's a dishonest system. The entire dollar fiat currency system is a cheating system. And who's cheating? The people who run it. The rich men north of Richmond. And frankly, the Federal Reserve, Central Bank, all of that, the globalist banksters, they are cheaters, they are liars, they are fraudsters. And if you use the dollar, by the way, which is impossible to avoid completely, but the more you use the dollar, the more you support their cheating system that is keeping us poor, that is making Americans poor, that's destroying the middle class. And so the answer to this, by the way, the honest answer, and we'll get into, you know, James Rickards and Andy Shechtman and others, the honest answer is for all of us to stop using the cheating system. Stop using the dollar. Stop using the banks. Stop buying treasuries and create our own parallel alternative economy. And what are honest systems of exchanging value? Well, it turns out they're the same three things that I've continually mentioned here that are a store of value, or at least have some actual utility where governments can't cheat. And those three things, as you know, are gold and silver and crypto. Oh, and we do have a gold sponsor today, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But gold and silver and crypto. Governments can't create more gold. Governments can't dishonestly create, you know, more Bitcoin, for example. No government can create Monero. And remember when I interviewed Robert Kiyosaki, the Rich Dad author, a week ago, what did Robert Kiyosaki tell us? He said, I don't invest in anything the government can print. And that's wise. That's wise. Anyone who holds dollars, which are a dishonest, fraudulent, cheating, fake fiat counterfeit currency, okay, that's what dollars are. And by the way, the regime that prints them, the U.S. regime, is also broke, 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 dishonest, cheating, lying, criminal, traitors, backstabbers, powered by fake money, right? But when you hold these or if you put your savings in this currency, you will lose everything. You will lose it because they are looting it. They're looting it every single day. It doesn't have to wait for like, oh, one day is going to be a giant collapse. It's collapsing every day because they're printing every day. They're printing trillions of dollars every year now. Actually, sometimes a couple of trillion every, you know, every 2 or 3 months, depending on the month. But soon it'll be $1 trillion a month on average. And that's going to absolutely decimate the middle class. So Oliver Anthony's song is resonating with people because people are feeling like they've reached a tipping point of going broke. The poverty, the desperation is really starting to hit hard across America. And sadly, the oblivious American has no clue what's happening because they don't understand what is money. In fact, I think I heard Robert Kiyosaki quoting another expert on this. He said, the reason people are poor is because they don't understand the difference between real money and fake money. That's it. Think about the power of that statement. That's why people are poor, because they keep holding dollars instead of gold and silver. And the dollars keep losing value while the metals keep holding value. Isn't that interesting? I mean, think about the dollar. It's lost how much since even 1971? Like 95% or 93% or something. And since the Fed was formed, it's lost something like almost 99% of its value. That's theft, folks. That's just straight up theft. All right, let's shift gears here and go to the point, which was actually point number one, about mRNA vaccines in organic products. Now, the group called OrganicEye.org, which is run by Mark Castell, they are an industry watchdog that works to, you know, to try to protect organics. And excuse me here for a second. I'm looking at the Organic Eye website, I'm just learning that Ronnie Cummins has passed apparently in April, and I was not aware of that. I interviewed Ronnie Cummins many times. He was the founder of the Organic Consumers Association, and sorry that he's passed. May he rest in peace. I hope God blesses his soul. The rest of us shall fight on for integrity in the organic industry and clean food in general. But yeah, sorry about that. That just took me by surprise. Known Ronnie for quite a number of years. He didn't like my politics, but we agreed on on clean food. So, all right, getting back to Organic Eye. So Mark Castell and his group did a deep dive into the issue of mRNA vaccines, or actually genetically engineered vaccines, being used in organic livestock, which of course makes you wonder about organic beef or organic meat products, organic cheese, organic dairy, organic whey protein, organic everything. So what's the status of these vaccines being used in organics? To make a long story short, Organic Eye did quite an assessment of this, and they issued a briefing paper, which is a PDF, available on their website, organiceye.org. And they've sent a letter to the USDA demanding that the National Organic Standards Board, the NOSB, convene a public forum to explore this issue and decide on some guidelines. Because as it turns out, this is what Organic Eye discovered, turns out that some organic certifiers, and you know there are a lot of different organic certifiers, and we work with one in particular, you know, for our products and our labels and so on, and I've interviewed the representative from the one that we use, but there are many other ones. Now, it turns out that the issue of vaccines in animals that are certified organic is not universally applied by the organic certifiers. And according to Organic Eye, some of the organic certifiers, quote, look the other way, because this is not there's not a clear rule, at least as I understand it, from the National Organic Standards Board, which makes demands of what's allowed and what's not allowed in organics. So this issue is becoming a very hot issue because of mRNA vaccines. And a lot of people, of course, who are paying a premium for organic beef or organic milk or what have you, organic cheese, they don't want, obviously, mRNA vaccines in these animals. Because, you know, it's not allowed to feed them GMO animal feed, for example, right? Because we don't want the GMOs and we don't want the glyphosate and we don't want the pesticides. You don't want clean animals. Well, what if a group of cows is, you know, fed non-GMO feed and no pesticides, but they're injected with mRNA vaccines? What then? Right? So that's a question. And as of right now, this is not resolved. And it may take a couple of years for this to get resolved. And so you might be wondering, as a consumer, what can you do? Well, I've got some, I guess, bad news and good news. Okay, so the bad news is, because, you know, I run a food science lab, and we're serious about food science, and we have multiple mass spec instruments, and we run tests for heavy metals and glyphosate and atrazine and aflatoxins and other things, nutritive minerals and so on. And we're adding dioxin testing soon. You may have heard me talk about that after the East Palestine train accident in East Ohio. We're adding more testing. Well, there is no way to test a cheese product or a whey protein product for whether the original animal was injected with mRNA. There's no mRNA, you know, signature or residue that can be tested after the fact. And even in the meat products, it's not clear to me yet whether mRNA vaccines could leave behind some telltale signs or something in the meat that could possibly be tested. Maybe the presence of certain antibodies, perhaps. Maybe the presence of spike protein. But it's not clear to me whether that testing is even possible. And certainly, if it is even theoretically possible, I don't believe anybody's developed a method for actual SARS-CoV-2 spike protein testing itself. And protein testing is a whole different realm of mass spectrometry, by the way, because proteins are very large, you know, very, very large molecules compared to the molecules that we normally test, like atrazine or glyphosate, which is very small, tiny, you know, low mass. Proteins are massive, you know, thousands of times larger than a glyphosate molecule, for example. And so to even test for proteins, you have to have a protein, you have to have a mass spec instrument that's set up for the protein analysis, which involves a computational analysis called deconvolution of the data. In other words, gosh, I don't want to get too geeky on this, but basically the software has to look at the fragments of it and take a guess of what the original molecule was before it broke apart. And that's called deconvolution. And there are algorithms for that. And they're well known. There are libraries for different kinds of proteins, but I'm not sure that the spike protein is part of those libraries, because probably there's a massive cover-up out there. You know, this is what we found out with the PCR testing equipment, massive cover-up that PCR is quackery when it comes to a quantitative analysis of, you know, any kind of infection. It's total quackery. It's like voodoo. It doesn't work. You can't get quantitative information out of PCR. It just, period. You can't do it. So who knows whether you can even test like a beef product for mRNA residue. So what that means is that since you probably can't test for it, and by the way, the non-GMO project has the same challenge in many ways, because there are many food products where you can't test for GMOs because the food has been so heavily refined. For example, you can take GMO corn, and if you extract, let's say, corn syrup from the GMO corn, there's no GMO fingerprint in the corn syrup. So you can take corn syrup to a lab and say, hey, test this corn syrup for GMOs. And they're going to test it. They're going to say, well, I mean, there's no GMOs in the corn syrup. And you're like, great, that must mean it came from non-GMO corn. But if the lab is honest, they'll tell you, no, that's not what that means. It could have come from GMO corn, but the GMOs are long gone by the time it becomes corn syrup or, you know, maltodextrin or whatever else, or, you know, ascorbic acid, vitamin C is extracted from corn. You can't tell that came from GMO corn, right? So there are not lab tests to determine always or even often whether something's GMO. Did you know that? And so even the non-GMO project has to basically use supply chain attestations and certifications to go back up the supply chain and say, okay, do you assert that these cows, you know, were never fed GMOs, or that these ingredients came only from non-GMO sources or only organic sources, and so on. Same thing's probably going to have to happen with these vaccines. Since there's no real way that I'm aware of to test these final products for whether the original animal was vaccinated with these genetically engineered vaccines, then what it means is you're going to have to go up the supply chain and audit the farmers somehow. And let me tell you a big, dirty secret about the organics industry here that might piss off a few people, but who cares? There is so much fraud in organic certification, it would blow your mind. A lot of it comes out of China. Now, I want to be clear, certified organic is a step in the right direction. The label does mean something, especially when those foods are grown in Canada, the United States, Europe, Australia, even Mexico is better than China. And you know, certified organic means something in Japan and in Taiwan and so on. But out of China, I don't trust the organic certs because I've seen too much fraud. And so if you're talking about something like, you know, mRNA-free meat or cheese or dairy, if it comes out of China and it claims to be mRNA free, I wouldn't trust it at all. And just to summarize this issue, because we have a lot of issues to cover today, here's my advice as a food scientist, you know, a published food scientist. Here's my advice. Number one, start with organic. So always buy organic when you can. But also have the wisdom to know that organic doesn't mean that it's all good. Something that's certified organic, by the way, is almost never even tested for heavy metals like lead or arsenic or cadmium because there's no testing required under USDA organic. Did you know that? In fact, there's not even any glyphosate testing required. So I've seen products that are certified organic that are heavily contaminated. And by the way, that's the next piece of my advice, is get your food from trusted sources that are either, you know, local growers, farmers that you know, that you talk to. Maybe you can go visit their farm. You get to know about their practices. Or get it from a source that actually does the testing like we do, healthrangerstore.com. We do the testing. In fact, as soon as we get our dioxide testing interface set up, actually, that's a whole new triple quad system. I'm going to give you a new video tour of our lab, because I haven't shot video in the lab for, I don't know, a couple years. So I got to give you the full tour because we have so many new instruments there. And I'm going to do that, walk you through the dioxin testing using the gas chromatography setup, which is, man, you're going to be blown away. It's the gear. It's pretty easy to geek out on this stuff because it's really high tech. It's kind of cool to look at it. And we also have a sample prep instrument that's also pretty cool that does automated pressurized, you know, solvent extraction from the food samples and so on. So I'll be showing you that as soon as we get this new GC mass spec system up and running. And it'll be fascinating. The point is, start with organic, but also don't think, you know, don't believe that organic alone means the food is clean. It isn't, often. And the other thing is, when it comes to storable food, I know that non-organic storable food is very inexpensive. And there's a lot of options out there of just, you know, regular, like, super delicious storable food, you know, instant meals, whatever. Well, folks, if it's not organic, then it's almost certain to have some residue, because it was grown with pesticides and often herbicides and sometimes atrazine and sometimes glyphosate, because that's what farmers use. Unless they're growing organic, they are spraying it. So just understand that if you buy, you know, the low-cost, non-organic, cheap, storable food, which I understand, sometimes that's all people can afford, or that's all they want to invest in it, and maybe they figure, you know, who cares if the world's going to end, I don't care about eating a little bit of pesticide residue. Okay, I get it. But just understand that you're eating some Monsanto in there. It's just, it's going to be GMOs, it's going to be pesticides and herbicides. As long as people understand that that's what they're getting, you know, that it's a free market. They can decide. But I won't sell that stuff, because I won't sell something that supports Bayer or Monsanto. It's just that simple. I will only sell certified organic, lab-tested, storable food, and because that's what I want to eat myself. That's what I want for my family and friends. And that's also what I want to help share with the community when that time comes. And we'll talk about Bill Holter's Mad Max scenario here shortly. In any case, if you want ultra-clean, laboratory-tested, mass-spec-tested, certified organic and beyond, storable foods, nutritional products, and all that, support us. HealthRangerStore.com. We're the only online retailer in the world that I'm aware of that conducts such rigid testing on nearly everything we sell. Nobody else even comes close to our strict limits and our routine testing. And if anybody ever challenges that, by the way, I was just over the weekend, I was doing a backup of the data files. Actually, it looks like that backup is still running remotely. I've got data files on heavy metals testing all the way back to 2016. I was just looking at the folder names. So we were doing heavy metals testing since 2016. And in that time, we've run tens of thousands of tests on food products. And I don't think there's anybody in the world that has done more food testing than we have. I mean, we test more than any university in the world that I can even think of. I think we're actually the most prolific food and supplement testing laboratory in the world. It's just that we don't offer services to the public because we're fully occupied with our own internal testing. So that's because we have a lot of food that we have to test. All right, moving on to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Now, you can read her Substack, by the way, at drtenpenny.substack.com. And she just posted this, and she also reached out to me about this, the Ohio Medical Board hearing. And she talks about this hearing was held in Columbus, Ohio, and her license was suspended. And they accused her of only one thing, that she failed to cooperate with their investigation. That's it, that she failed to cooperate. And yet, as Sherry Tenpenny says, quote, we answered every one of their letters on time. And Eric Jones, the other attorney involved here, she's also got Tom Renz, but Eric Jones wrote every response and attended the board hearing on August 9th, which I was not required to attend. And Tom Renz entered this into the public record. I'm just going to read a couple of lines from this. This is from Thomas Renz. There are no allegations that Dr. Tenpenny hurt any clients or any patients. There are no allegations that she's defrauded anybody or that she's done anything illegal or illicit. Rather, we're having an investigation on a procedural matter and looking at a recommendation of indefinite suspension of our medical license for, quote, failure to cooperate, which is something that we absolutely disagree with. It's quite clear that we've made a very good faith effort to cooperate. We objected to a bad inquiry or a bad faith inquiry, which is evidence of cooperation. It is not evidence of failure to cooperate. It is absolutely the opposite. Under the law, we have the absolute right to object to something that we disagree with. In other words, the board is saying that because you disagreed with our inquiry, then you're not cooperating with us. It's kind of like the board is saying, well, you have to cooperate with our attempt to destroy you. If you don't cooperate with our attempt to destroy you, then we're going to say that you're not cooperating and we'll use that to yank your license, which is how we're going to destroy you. You see, it's a catch-22, completely outside the rule of law, no due process. Pardon my language, but frankly, this is bullshit. So, it goes on, and you can read more details, but Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is being punished and just dragged through this because she dared to challenge the status quo. And that's it. That's it. And the fact that there are medical boards, by the way, is a violation of basic human rights. Did you know that? Medical boards are tyrannical regimes run by pharmaceutical interests. Medical boards are a centralization of power in the hands of people who don't know much about health. And they know almost nothing about natural health. Across the country, medical boards are, for the most part, pharmaceutical puppets, pharma whores. They have worked for pharma. Sometimes they still work for pharma. And their job is to enforce the pharmaceutical cartels. And in some cases, like medical device manufacturers. But their overall job is to make sure that the profits keep rolling in for big pharma and big medicine. And if there's somebody like Dr. Sherry Tenpenny who's teaching people why vaccines might carry risks, well, then they can't have that. They can't allow that person to voice their well-informed, well-researched conclusions. No, they have to shut that down. So this is how they do it. They yank your license. See, this is why I have my new show, Decentralize TV. And it talks about decentralizing not just money and assets and food, but medicine. Because medical boards are centralized tyranny over the practice of medicine. I don't trust any medical board in America. I do trust Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. In fact, I trust her with my life. She knows more about these topics of vaccines and nutrition and what's happening than any person that I could imagine would ever sit on one of these boards, you know, any pharma whore across America. So if you want to support Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, she does have some pretty substantial legal fees and so on. You can go to her Substack page. Again, drtenpenny.substack.com. You can read her blog. You can donate to her legal team if you wish. She's got a give, send, go. It's called defenddrt.com. Defenddrt, that's Dr. Tenpenny. But defenddrt.com if you want to go there and help her. And you can join her email list at drtenpenny.com, by the way. And there's some other things you can do. We're going to be interviewing Dr. Tenpenny, of course, coming up soon and hear the rest of all of this, which I'm sure is fascinating. All right, let's move on to Bill Holter. Bill Holter was interviewed by Greg Hunter, USA Watchdog. That ran over the weekend, I believe, or Friday. And Holter says that the dollar is going to take a massive hit in the next financial crisis. Quote, the actual bottom line is that dollars are just pieces of paper backed by our government. The dollar's backed by the full faith and credit of a bankrupt, insolvent government, and people will figure that out very quickly, he says. When it comes to survival, people are not going to give up something real for nothing. He says, we're in the weeds right now because of interest rates. Look at mortgage rates. They're well over 7% for a 30-year mortgage. It's going to hurt housing. Commercial real estate has already been destroyed. I think we're in the weeds because interest rates are at a point that nothing can be refinanced and rolled over. It's not my opinion, he says. It's a mathematical equation. The debt cannot be paid back. It's not possible. He's talking about government debt. We will default one way or another. He's talking about the nation. We will print the crap out of the dollar and devalue it, or outright non-payment. And he's absolutely right. He said we would end up in a Mad Max scenario when the credit dries up and the store shelves go empty. The Mad Max world is now looking like it's going to come true sooner rather than later. Now, I heard James Rickards over the weekend also say that when the Western financial world debanked Russia from the SWIFT system, which disconnected Russia from over $300 billion in assets that Russia held in Western currencies in Western central banks, that that act was in fact a financial default. Which makes sense. If you can't pay back what you owe, that's a default. So what James Rickards pointed out, and what Bill Holter is very much aware of, is that the Western financial system is already in default. It has already defaulted on its obligations of the money that was owned by Russia. Again, $300 billion. We are already in a bankrupt system. Now they're just trying to cover it up for as long as possible, and that cover-up can't last. And by the way, as I said, after the SWIFT debanking last year, I said, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing my memory of what I said, that this is going to be one of the most significant events in the history of money and finance, and it's the beginning of the end of Western civilization. Because it just sent out a message to the world that no other country can trust the banking and monetary system of the West. And so what James Rickards said just recently is that it was that event that lit a fire under Russia and China and Saudi Arabia and India and Turkey and a bunch of other countries, Brazil and so on, to hurry up and launch the BRICS currency for international settlement among those countries. They weren't going to do it this quickly until the U.S. pressured, you know, the financial system gatekeepers to debank Russia from the SWIFT system. Which happened, I believe, in, was it March of 2022? Or thereabouts, very close to that. So that event is what caused the acceleration of this effort by Russia and China and so on to launch the new BRICS system. And by the way, speaking of that, let's just talk about that point here, James Rickards on BRICS. And, you know, there's been speculation that BRICS, the new BRICS global currency, that it would be, quote, backed by gold. And that's actually not the case. It's not backed by gold in the sense that it would be redeemable in gold. Rather, as Rickards explained, and I've got to take Rickards' word on this because Rickards is probably one of the world's top experts in this field. He says, no, the BRICS currency will be valued in gold mass, ounces or frankly, probably grams, because nobody else in the world uses ounces anymore. It's going to be grams. So, I mean, the U.S. still isn't on the metric system for whatever reason, but that's a different podcast, I guess. Anyway, it's going to be grams. So the currency will be valued at grams of gold, not the dollar value of the grams of gold. You understand? So countries like India and China and Turkey and Russia and so on will be trading with each other with a currency that is actually very stable in its value because it is tied to the grams of gold that exist in the world, and the grams of gold cannot be artificially inflated. Nobody can just come up with a lot more gold. You can't counterfeit gold. You have to mine it. And mining takes a lot of money and a lot of energy and time and so on. So there's only a certain amount of new gold added to the supply of gold in the world every year. And that's called the inflation amount of gold. And I forgot the exact number, but I think it's like 1.5% or something in that realm. So it's not a huge number, which means that the total amount of gold that's available to the central banks and institutional investors and so on is pretty stable. And most importantly, it cannot be counterfeited. So importantly, what this means, and again, James Rickards really pointed this out, is that This is genius, actually. It means that even when the U.S. tries to manipulate the price of gold, that doesn't affect the new BRICS currency, because the BRICS currency is not valued based on the dollar price of gold. It's based on grams of gold, the supply of gold in the world, not the dollar value. So Russia and China have figured out a way to bypass America's financial manipulation of prices of gold and silver through the paper markets. You know, there's a lot of price suppression in gold and also in silver. And those shenanigans are carried out by, you know, JP Morgan and other globalist banks who are trying to pretend like the dollar still has value by keeping the price of metals suppressed. And they do that through fraud, basically. Just straight up fraud. Well, that's not going to affect the BRICS system. So the BRICS currency system is going to allow international trade and settlement between member nations. And there's going to be probably over at least 80, maybe more than 100 nations that sign up to use this. And when this happens, what's the demand for the dollar going to be at that point? Internationally, it's going to be, you know, it's going to plummet rapidly. Which nation will want to use dollars for trade settlement when you can't trust dollars and the U.S. has weaponized dollars and dollars are losing value and the U.S. is printing dollars in their counterfeit cheating system of money printing? Why would anybody use dollars? And the truth is, nobody else would around the world. The only people oblivious enough to keep using dollars will be the oblivious Americans, who are still thinking that the dollar, or they're still confused, like, why is the dollar losing value? But that's, they don't even ask it that way. All they do is they go to the grocery store and like, why is food getting more expensive? They don't even understand. It's the dollar losing value. The Americans are going to be the ones left holding the bag when the music stops. The people who are just frankly uninformed and are still holding dollars. This is why I've been sounding the alarm on this for quite some time. Get out of the dollar. The dollar's going to zero. And according to Bill Holter, it's going to unleash Mad Max. He may indeed be correct. And in getting out of the dollar, you know, what are your options? Well, there aren't that many. And I've mentioned, of course, gold and silver and crypto. But even in those areas, you have to make a choice between somebody else having custody versus you having custody or self-custody. For example, when it comes to gold, let's say, you can buy gold and put it in a vault somewhere and pay for storage. Or you can buy gold at Kitco that has, you know, gold vaulting service and very reliable and so on. Or you can buy gold through, you know, a number of online retailers and they'll hold it for you. And you'll be able to log in and you can see numbers that represent your gold. And then presumably you could redeem your gold or sell it back and get fiat out of it. Or some places you could request delivery of the gold, but there's extra fees involved typically for that. But that's somebody else's custody of your gold. It's like you send them a bunch of money and then you can log into your screen and you can see how much gold that they say they have for you. Versus taking delivery of gold and having it in your house or in your safe or your basement or wherever you're hiding it, right? Or in your pockets, if you want to walk around with it. Self-custody means you have zero counterparty risk. This is something that Andy Shechtman speaks about quite a lot, and this is a critical point. I think Robert Kiyosaki completely gets this as well. I know he does. Gold in your hands has zero counterparty risk. Silver in your hands, zero counterparty risk. Even, frankly, Bitcoin in your wallet has zero counterparty risk. But if you buy Bitcoin at, let's say, Fidelity, then, you know, Fidelity, you just log in and Fidelity says, yeah, we have this much Bitcoin in your name, but they have it, not you, you see. This is like logging into your bank and you see how much you have in your savings account, but you don't have it. They have it. And in a bail-in scenario, they can decide to keep it, and they will. So whatever your assets are going to be, self-custody is absolutely key. If it's gold and silver, take custody, take possession. Then you have zero counterparty risk. You still have some price volatility risk if you're still thinking about what is gold valued in fiat currency dollars, but that's a silly way to look at it because the dollar value is, of course, heavily manipulated. We need to be thinking about gold and silver in terms of ounces or grams. How many grams do you have or how many ounces do you have? That's easier for most Americans to think about ounces. Same thing with crypto. If you have it in your own custody, then again, you have zero counterparty risk. Most people will keep most of their assets in vehicles that are controlled by someone else, where someone else is the custodian. A pension fund. Oh, you think you have this much money in your pension? Oh, well, guess what? You really don't. It's just an IOU, right? Your retirement fund, your Social Security fund, your even your bank account, your savings account, your investment account, your whatever, your stocks. Who holds your stocks? Not you, probably. Do you actually have the stock certificates issued in your name? No, almost nobody does that. I mean, I know a few people who do that, but it's a hassle to get that done. Most people buy stocks through a brokerage and then the stocks are held in the name of the brokerage. The brokerage owns the stocks. You are just a creditor to the brokerage. So when it all hits the fan and everything starts falling apart, you're going to lose everything that you don't have custody of. At least that's what has happened throughout history. It just vanishes. You know, the currency becomes valueless. Hyperinflation, money printing, you know, banks fail, everybody declares force majeure, this and that. It's what you have custody of that actually matters at the end of the day. What can you prove that you own? Do you have the deed to the piece of land? You know, that would be considered self-custody. Do you have the actual stock certificates issued in your name? That would be considered custody of a piece of a business. You know, do you have the actual artwork? If you're a fine art investor, do you have the art or not? If you don't have the art, guess what? It can vanish. So when the BRICS nations begin to really shift away from the dollar and to use their own new BRICS currency backed by the mass of gold, or grams of gold, the dollar is going to rapidly lose even more value. The U.S. will have to engage in even more money printing, and we're going to get into a hyperinflationary cycle of mad money printing that's going to surprise everyone. And when that happens, you're going to start to see stores adjusting their prices a lot more frequently. You know, you go in one day, that loaf of bread is $5, and then a week later, it's like $6. What happened? I mean, you're already noticing food prices are through the roof, but it's going to get very rapid. And again, people sitting on dollars are just going to watch their purchasing power erode away. And by the way, Russia and China are going to sit back and laugh their asses off as the U.S. just plunges into an economic black hole of debt. And then the Fed will end up printing money to buy the debt, which is just going to add to the hyperinflationary doom cycle. And we know how this ends because we've watched it before, or at least we've seen records of it happening before throughout human history. And it always ends with the people getting royally screwed and the corrupt government lackeys, you know, walking away with the loot. That's how it always ends. It's not going to be any different this time. So the way out of the system, gold, silver, and crypto. Now, my disclaimer, though, I'm not your financial advisor. Don't take this as financial advice. Do your own research. Get your own super expert advisor, qualified person, whatever's right for you. Do your own research, figure out what's right for you. If you think it's awesome to just hold money in a bank, you trust the banks, hey, that's on you. If you trust the dollar, you think the dollar is going to hold value, just put all your savings in dollars and see what happens. If you think that the government's going to protect the value of your money, yeah, go for it. I mean, you'll end up homeless, but it's up to you, right? So do what is right for you and don't take this as financial advice. However, if gold and silver are an option that you want to consider, our sponsor today is the Treasure Island Precious Metals Company. And we worked with them for years, and they offer very competitive pricing, discreet delivery, so that you can take custody. And right now is absolutely probably the best time to buy that we're going to see for a long time, because the premiums are very low on silver, especially because a lot of people are not buying metals right now because a bank hasn't collapsed recently. So it's just like everybody forgot about the collapses that happened in March. And so right now is actually a really great time to buy. You can find them at metalswithmike.com. And just to be clear, I do not earn any affiliate revenues or percentages of any kind. Metalswithmike.com. You can check out their real-time pricing. And you'll see how competitive they are. Trusted, guaranteed, insured delivery. Can't go wrong. And if you want to get crypto, by the way, now I got to warn you, crypto is risky and it is volatile. And, you know, we don't know what the regulatory decisions are going to be coming down. Maybe one day the government says Bitcoin's illegal. I don't know. Or Monero. And that could significantly affect the prices, at least the fiat prices of them. But crypto has the advantage of being very, very portable and very high liquidity, by the way, in Bitcoin and Monero and a few other coins. But if crypto is part of your portfolio, then a really good exchange that has treated me well, in fact, it's the only exchange that has treated me well, is called Kraken, K-R-A-K-E-N, Kraken.com. And we've even had a Kraken representative on as a guest on our show to talk about Kraken and their philosophy. And ever since they reinstated my account after accidentally banning me at first due to a mistaken identity issue it was quickly resolved. Ever since then, it's been smooth sailing. So you can buy crypto on Kraken, transfer it to your own wallet. Boom, you have self-custody. So you have zero counterparty risk after that point. So those are the off-ramps that I can think of, plus maybe real estate. If you have a great offer to buy some real estate and you know it's local and you can protect it and you can have the title and everything, that could be a good option as well. But gold and silver and crypto are the things that are going to help people outlast the collapse of the dollar and, frankly, the Mad Max scenario that's coming. But we'll hear more from Andy Scheckman here coming up. Let me go to the Joe Biden story next, where, and this is from Axios, Biden wants new housing program for migrant families. Yeah, of course, Axios won't print illegal aliens, even though that's what it is. The administration is asking for $40 billion in emergency funding from Congress, and this effort's going to be used to build essentially cities for migrant family members that DHS will say that the migrants have to stay on campus, but you know they're not really going to enforce it, so they're just going to leave and then just infiltrate all across America, of course. Basically, it's a forward operating base for the invasion of America. That's what this is. It's an anchor city for illegals to come to. Like, here, come here. We'll help you across the border. That's what DHS does, you know. Here, hop on this bus. We'll just drive you across the border. We'll take you to this city that we built just for you using taxpayer money from the American taxpayers. And while the bus is driving there, the bus will probably pass like homeless Americans and homeless American veterans who are completely ignored by the Biden administration, you know, on their way as they're being transported to the gleaming new city, brand new city built for illegals by the Biden regime as part of an invasion occupation strategy for America. So this is one of the evils of money printing. When the government can print money, they can print whatever they want to do anything they want, even if it's treason, even if it's an invasion of America, even if it's wildly illegal, unethical, unconstitutional, doesn't matter, they can print money. That's why the power to print money is the power to destroy a nation. That's exactly what they're doing with it right now. They're printing money to build the destruction of America through things like this, this invasion city. And notice they won't stop the invasion. They're not even pretending that they're going to stop the invasion. They're saying, we're going to help it. We just got to give those invaders, you know, a little more comfortable place to live while they're invading and occupying America. That's it. I mean, talk about absolute treason. This is an act of war against America. And those who are carrying it out are treasonous traitors in a wartime act of treason against the United States. At least that's my opinion. But it's very doubtful that they'll be prosecuted for such things, since they control the DOJ, which is also weaponized against America as well. But, you know, there you go. This is true. $40 billion. You notice also Joe Biden has a lot of money for Ukraine, too. But, I mean, they say it's Ukraine. But if you look it up, you can't really track where it's going, can you? It's kickbacks, bribery, fraud, you know, probably some human trafficking going on. They want endless money for Ukraine, endless money for cities for illegals, no money for the U.S. border, no money to stop the invasion, no money for veterans, no money for the homeless. They're not building cities for the American people, the middle class that they've wiped out with their money printing and food inflation. No, no. You, the American people, you have been thrown under the bus. You have been discarded because you're being replaced by the illegals. You're being replaced. That's why you were subjected to heavy vaccination, kill shots, depopulation, bioweapons to eliminate you, get you the heck out of the way so that the unvaccinated migrants can come on in and take over. After all, the administration views the American people as expendable, useless, you know, biological bags of nothing. They don't value you at all. But you already knew that. Okay, there's one more thing. Another $1.2 billion is being used, approved by the Biden administration, to suck carbon out of the air. That's a headline from CNN. To suck carbon out of the air. Biden admin announced on Friday an investment, they say. It's an investment to kickstart U.S. carbon removal industry. This is called Direct Air Capture Removal Projects. Huge vacuum cleaners sucking carbon dioxide out of the air, they say, using chemicals to remove the greenhouse gas. Once removed, CO2 gets stored underground. So the U.S. Department of Energy is going to spend this $1.2 billion to fund two new projects in Texas and Louisiana, the South Texas Direct Air Capture Hub and Project Cypress in Louisiana. So these are terraforming operations. These are planetary scale treason against the human race and the biosphere of Earth. Just to be clear, when you suck CO2 out of the atmosphere, you are destroying life on the planet because, of course, CO2 is necessary for photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is the basis for all life as we know it on this planet. So here we have the government printing money to terraform the planet and destroy the atmosphere to carry out mass planetary genocide of not just humans, but also, of course, plants and animals. The entire biosphere is at risk because of these kinds of projects. Now, fortunately, these two pilot projects are not yet large enough to actually remove, of course, all the CO2 out of the atmosphere. Says that they're going to remove 2 million metric tons from the air annually, which is the equivalent of removing nearly 500,000 gas cars off the road. In other words, you could fight back against this terraforming operation by running your car, idling it in your driveway, restoring CO2, and maybe saving some trees that way, because trees need carbon dioxide, obviously, to grow. Again, climate lunatics and, you know, frankly, climate criminals, they don't know this. They think they're experts in climate science, but they pretend that CO2 is a poison somehow, when it's actually the most miraculous molecule on planet Earth. And these two pilot projects are just the beginning, though. Ultimately, they want to remove all the CO2 out of the atmosphere and kill off all life as we know it on this planet. Again, it's a planetary scale genocide terraforming operation. But it's going to take a ton of energy to run these machines. Where does the energy come from for the machines? Probably from the power grid. And what powers the power grid in Texas and Louisiana? mostly fossil fuels, folks. Some wind in there, some little bit of solar. Mostly fossil fuels. So do you see what a freaking scam this whole thing is? It's like, wait a minute. So we're going to spend billions of dollars to build giant machines that suck CO2 out of the atmosphere so we can call ourselves virtue signaling greeny weenies. These machines are almost certainly going to be powered ultimately by fossil fuels that release more CO2 into the atmosphere. And as a result, this whole project is a complete waste of time, but it makes the government look like it's doing something for the planet. And of course, it funnels money into the hands of the right donors who gave the right amount of money to the Biden crime family so they can get their kickbacks and bribes and payoffs, and they can build their giant terraforming machines, and then they can pretend to be doing something green for the planet when it's actually, it's not only scientifically stupid, it's also just total corruption, and it doesn't even work. I mean, thank God it doesn't work. Because if it did work, if it were really effective, we would all die, by the way, eventually, if they sucked all the CO2 out of the atmosphere. So we have to be happy that it does not work, that it will actually just probably add more CO2 to the atmosphere, which would actually help green the planet. So it's kind of ironic, isn't it? Now, just remember in all of this, by the way, this is all about the war on carbon. It's a war on carbon. They want to remove carbon. They want to sequester carbon. They want to reduce carbon. Your carbon, right? Your physical body, anyway. It's a lot of carbon. We're carbon-based life. So is your pet cat. So are the trees in your neighborhood and the grass. And the food that you're eating. It's all carbon-based. So when they're at war with carbon, they're at war with the food supply and with the human population. And they openly admit they're at war with carbon. They hate carbon. They hate humanity. All these climate lunatics are anti-human, demonic, you know, mass murderers, essentially. They are deliberately trying to murder humanity. Because remember what I said. They claim that human activity produces all this carbon and global warming. Therefore, the answer is to reduce human activity. Well, since all living humans engage in activity, the only way to reduce human activity is to have fewer living humans. By default, I mean, it's just straight logic. So depopulation is their answer to reducing human activity by reducing the number of humans living. Global genocide against an entire species, and that's us. The war on carbon. You know, CO2 is so critical for growing plants that, you know, the number one way to increase productivity in a greenhouse is to have a CO2 generator in the greenhouse. You know that? You can go online, you can buy CO2 generators. They use typically propane or natural gas to release carbon dioxide, and the plants go crazy. They love it. Talk about greening. Man, the plants love it. They'll produce, you know, two or three times as much food with more CO2. See, nobody in the media tells you that. They just pretend carbon is bad. And then they wonder, like, how come the crops are failing? Because you're sucking the CO2 out of the atmosphere, you morons. And they're trying to block the sun, too, which also, of course, blocks photosynthesis. If we could increase CO2 in the atmosphere by even just 50 parts per million, food yields would skyrocket around the world, and we would have less famine, less human suffering, less starvation, more nutrition. Higher levels of CO2 actually produce higher nutritional value in the foods. And that's scientifically proven, by the way, in multiple papers that we've covered in the past. So you want to nourish humanity, feed humanity. You want people to be healthy. You want people to not suffer. You should be building giant machines that release CO2 into the atmosphere instead of sucking it out. maybe there's a way to reverse those machines and put more CO2 into the air so that goodness could actually prevail and we could actually have a green planet instead of a frozen dead ice ball, which is what we will end up with if they suck the CO2 out of the skies. I'm telling you, folks, we are living among a satanic death cult, is essentially, I mean, that's, it's not even hyperbole. That's exactly what it is. The globalists in charge of things, they are a death cult. They're trying to destroy humanity, and they're satanic in the sense that, of course, you know, they worship Satan. They're anti-human. They promote transhumanism, and they're pedophiles and child mutilators and child murderers with the abortion industry. So you're living on a planet run by a satanic death cult. I mean, think about that. And that describes, by the way, Western Empire. The United States, the United Kingdom, you know, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Western European countries, satanic death cultists. And that's why, frankly, it would be God's mercy on our planet if these satanic death cults actually failed and collapsed and no longer tortured humanity, by the way. So you should actually pray for the end of the satanic death cult on this planet, which actually, you know, when the dollar collapses, it's worth celebrating, because it that's the main engine of the satanic death cult, is just endless fiat currency money printing. It's the source of tremendous evil and pain and suffering and death across our world right now. The dollar, the demise of the dollar is a celebration of life, actually, a celebration of what is good, because the dollar represents pure evil. Now, by the way, the military demise of Western empires may actually be a lot closer than we realize, because there's been a major breakthrough announced by communist China, and I'm not at all a fan, of course, of the CCP or the PLA, nor communism. But because they're not focused on silly things like, you know, transgenderism in the military, instead they're actually doing research, like hard physics research, they've been able to develop something rather extraordinary. The South China Morning Post first reported on this. Chinese military scientists claim to have achieved a huge breakthrough of laser weapon technology. High-energy laser weapons, the story says, can now operate infinitely, I think they mean indefinitely, thanks to a new cooling system that completely eliminates the buildup of waste heat. The technology could significantly change the face of battle by extending engagement times and increasing range and damage, researchers say. Yeah, that's the understatement of the day. So the story says that according to scientists at the National University of Defense Technology in Changsha, Hunan province, the new cooling system eliminates the harmful heat that is generated during the operation of high-energy lasers. This has been the major technical challenge for laser weapon development. Now, with this new technology, weapons can generate laser beams for as long as they want without any interruption or degradation in performance. In other words, they don't need to turn them off for cooling. See, typically, a laser weapon system right now, such as the ones that the U.S. Navy has, they can only fire for a split second. And often they have to cycle on and off. Different kinds of lasers have to cycle, you know, maybe even thousands of times a second. Because they can't just run full bore, because it'll just overheat and melt everything. So if you could take a laser and just keep it on, 100% power, nonstop, you would have a devastating weapon. Because lasers being, of course, tightly focused, coherent light, or they don't always have to be in the light spectrum, but they often are, they can melt metal, you know, they can melt things, especially things that are not reflective, such as, let's say, the hulls of ships and, you know, the command area of a ship, the command tower of an aircraft carrier, for example. China could fire a laser into the command center and just melt the whole thing, or set it on fire, or puncture the side of a ship or you know, destroy drones, destroy aircraft, destroy incoming missiles just by keeping the laser on it and tracking its movement and just melting it, or melting enough of it to screw up its guidance or flight control systems or what have you. Lasers are going to be the weapon of the future. And lasers, of course, have key advantages. Number one, they move at the speed of light. I think that's obvious. But this changes everything on the battlefield. The range of a laser is, I mean, essentially the range of light is unlimited because the photons keep going forever. But in a practical sense, you can only focus a laser beam for a certain distance before it loses the concentration of the beam. So you have to have really high-end optics and a really enormous source of power. And then cooling has been the main technical problem until now. Well, if they solve the cooling, guess what? There are power sources that China's also developed recently that can be used on an ongoing basis that have very high power. In fact, a couple months ago, there was some kind of new chemical power source that could power a laser, a battle laser, and it could just produce like gigawatts on demand. And that's what you need, or gigawatts, you might say. You need gigawatts of power in order to have battle lasers, basically. And how do you produce that, and how do you handle the heat? Well, China's figured it out, but we have not. So the reason I mentioned all this is because right now, the game changer in Ukraine with Russia is Russia's hypersonic missiles. The hypersonic missiles, of course, moving at multiples of the speed of sound. They can carry nuclear warheads, and they cannot be stopped by Western anti-aircraft systems. And that's been a game changer. I think they're called the Kinzhal missiles. I think that means dagger in Russian. I'm not sure. But they have been very effective and cannot be stopped by the Patriot missile system. In fact, I think most of the Patriot missile systems that the U.S. sent to Ukraine have been destroyed, many of them by exactly those hypersonic missile systems. But lasers travel the speed of light. Not just hypersonic, but, you know, speed of light. it's like, how many meters per second is that? As far as a battle is concerned, you can just call it instant. It's instantly at its target. And light is not that strongly affected by gravity. So this is worth noting because, of course, bullets fall, right? Even artillery falls, obviously. Artillery has a trajectory, and then gravity takes over, has an arc range. And airplanes, of course, you know, have to fight against gravity all the time to remain airborne, and they have to expend fuel to do that. Missiles have to fight against gravity. Light, even though technically light is bent a little by gravity, it's not that much. It's not enough to worry about on most battle scenarios. You just point and shoot, and that's it. Even though, of course, the gravity of Earth does create a distortion of space-time, and light does bend. And I'm not going to go into the physics of it, but hopefully everybody listening knows that light does bend through a gravity field, but it's not that much, given the speed. Right? So when bullets are flying at a relatively slow speed, they fall a lot more on their flight path because, you know, gravity has more time to affect them. Whereas photons of light, because they travel at the speed of light, gravity doesn't have much time to affect it before it hits its intended target. In other words, bottom line is, with this technology, China could easily mount battle lasers on its ships, or perhaps on large aircraft. And with some targeting systems and, you know, gyro stabilization and whatever, they can keep a laser aimed at an intended target for an extended period of time to destroy that target or melt through the hole or what have you. So here's the question. How powerful are these lasers going to be, and how many seconds does it take for them to melt through, let's say, the hull of an aircraft carrier? And what if that answer is even 60 seconds? That's a long time for a laser to operate, by the way. 60 seconds of full power. Would that melt through, you know, how many inches of steel? I don't know. I guess it depends on all kinds of factors, even the atmospheric conditions and, you know, how much clutter there is in the air at that moment that could block the laser, and what's the movement of the ship, and how well does the laser system track the movement of the ship to keep the laser pointed at the exact same spot to try to melt it? There's all kinds of questions. And what if they polish the side of the aircraft carrier and make it mirror-like? You know, that would be one of the main defenses against laser weapons, is to have shiny mirrors. And so you're probably going to start to see naval ships and maybe aircraft have mirror-like appearances in order to deflect battle lasers. No kidding. I mean, it's going to look like science fiction out there with all these, like, stealth mirror airplanes flying around all shiny and reflecting light, but that's going to be the defense against lasers. And the other defense against lasers, by the way, is to have return fire that tracks the origin of the lasers. So you might have kinetic return fire that just tracks the laser. So, you know, if China has to keep a laser on for 60 seconds, well, it's exposing its position. It's probably ionizing a lot of atmosphere. Like, you're going to see that beam, you know. You're not going to be able to cover it up. It's probably going to fry a few seagulls along the way, too. And anything else that gets in its way is going to just get turned into ash. Like, poof. Oh, that was a bird. Poof. Oh, what was that? Oh, man, that was someone swimming on the beach right there. Poof. Oh, man. Better turn that thing off. It's just like turning everybody to dust. Now, guess where it makes a lot of tactical sense to have lasers that can dump a lot of heat quite easily? Oh, in orbit. That's right, in orbit. So as China masters the battle laser space, which clearly it's well in the lead on that, and the U.S., sadly, the U.S. Pentagon is run by a bunch of libtard woketards at this point, who probably couldn't build any weapon system that actually worked. But China will have orbiting laser satellites that can, of course, fire down upon targets, ground targets, essentially anywhere in the world, as long as the satellite is positioned over that target and as long as there's not a lot of cloud cover or rain or things like that. So that brings up all kinds of interesting things, right? You know, you're fighting a war, you think you have cover on the ground, and then, like, this giant laser beam comes out of the sky and just, like, melts your vehicle from the top down. Is that coming? Yeah, it is. Now, they'll probably be, I would say, nuclear-powered satellites, so they're going to be some pretty hefty vehicles to launch. They'll probably generate a lot of nuclear power stored up in some kind of large capacitor battery situation, and then they'll be able to fire, you know, a burst for 10 seconds, and then they'll have to recharge for 10 hours or something like that. That's likely the way it's going to work. But what a weapon, huh? Just to be able to, like, the hand of God reaching down. Just now, some of you are going to say that's what happened in Maui. I know, on Lahaina. Directed energy weapons, right? DEWs. I know, I was ahead of you on this one. I know you were about to go there. Directed energy weapons do exist, and lasers are one subcategory of DEWs. And some people believe that directed energy weapons are being used right now to scorch the earth and set fires and destroy targets, maybe even to set fire to food facilities or refineries or what have you. Some people believe the United States has this technology in orbit and is weaponizing it against the U.S. infrastructure right now. Well, that's a possibility. But could it also be that China is doing that right now? Maybe China set fire to Maui. I mean, I don't know. I'm not accusing them of doing that. I'm just saying, or maybe Russia did. Who knows? Maybe North Korea did. I kind of doubt North Korea has that kind of tech. But it could be us, you know, the U.S. It could be the enemies of the U.S. It could be anybody. Because, I mean, I think our own government is the enemy of the U.S. at this point. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're directing energy weapons all over the place to just try to destroy as many towns as possible. But why would they pick Lahaina? Like, what's happening in Lahaina that pissed off the globalists? I don't know. Are people just having too much joy there or something? Like, life is so awesome here. Well, we can't have that. You know, the joy factor is too high. Let's burn that place down. I mean, I don't know if that's what happened. Maybe it was just a wildfire. Maybe it was some climate cultist setting fires, you know, arsonists running around trying to prove how bad the climate is. And it got out of hand. I don't know. But it could be directed energy weapons. In any case, what we do know is that China is ahead on the development of this. And that means that, well, let me put it this way. I'm trying to think of a historic battle that might be a good metaphor for this. Well, how about this? With the invention of the machine gun, I think it was the Gatling gun. It was a hand-cranked thing. And it was a large piece of equipment. You would roll it into place kind of like a cannon. And this was invented in the 1800s. You roll it into place, and it had a rotating barrel, like a minigun. And I don't know how many... I mean, it had a rotating set of barrels, like 16 barrels or something. Maybe it was 12. I don't know the exact number. If you want to see one of these, you can go to the Firearms Museum in Cody, Wyoming, and you can actually see one of these. Anyway, you roll it in and then you load it up and you just start cranking it. You physically crank the handle and it just fires off. But it's a Gatling gun, basically. When this was first introduced in war, the other side just got decimated. Because the other side, let's say, had, you know, simple, slow rifles, single-shot rifles or bolt-action rifles or whatever. The Gatling gun is just wipe them out. Well, that's what it's going to be like when we go up against China. If China has all these futuristic lasers and we're rolling in with aircraft carriers that were designed in the 1960s, it's not even going to be a battle. They're just going to fire their lasers and sink our ships and it's done. Because the U.S. hasn't invested in any real technology. I mean, not military tech. The U.S. has invested in all kinds of corruption and all kinds of BS. And, of course, all kinds of transgenderism and equality and all this nonsense. But the U.S., I mean, our ICBMs are decades old. We don't have hypersonic missiles that even Russia has developed. You know, we don't have the lasers that China's got now. I mean, the U.S. military is ancient at this point. It's decades outdated. We don't even have hyperglide reentry vehicles for our ICBMs. Did you know that? It's just like our ICBMs are like dumb missiles on a guaranteed trajectory that can easily be intercepted by, you know, anti-air systems like Russia has. So the U.S. just hasn't kept up with any kind of real investment in technology in the military space. And, you know, except the F-35, which doesn't work. And the F-35 is a joke. I mean, it's just like the bureaucracy. It's just, you know, 5,000 people chiming in with a committee to try to put everything in it. And as a result, nothing works, which kind of describes our entire government, by the way. That's the F-35. The F-35 will never be a combat viable aircraft. Except in rare circumstances, but then it'll take 1,000 hours of maintenance to put it back in the air after one flight, you know. And, you know, 1,000 parts have to be replaced and so on. It's not reliable like the F-16s were. The U.S. went from making military equipment that worked to making military equipment that's a joke, that barely functions, and is way too complicated, too many parts, can't make it work, you know, too fragile, too subject to you know, enemy jamming and electromagnetic weapons and so on. So the U.S. military is just, I mean, gosh, they proved that in Afghanistan. The U.S. military has become a joke on the world stage. Can't beat a bunch of, you know, goat herding terrorists. So, and losing badly in Ukraine as well. So I don't know how this ends, but it's going to be embarrassing for the American military. That's for sure. All right. With that said, I mean, I know that sounds harsh, but it's true. I mean, look at what we did. We walked away from Afghanistan, left behind billions of dollars of equipment, and left behind thousands of Americans there just to be tortured and killed. I mean, it's a horror show of incompetence and waste and fraud inside the U.S. military and the command structure. And, you know, you got our military generals up there now with, you know, 5-star generals or whatever they are with all their little trophy badges and everything. It looks like a banana republic because it is. They're just costumes now. They're just costumes. And one of the admirals is a man pretending to be a woman. He's got like high heels and a push-up bra along with all those ribbons that he or she never even earned. It's all a joke. It's a freaking clown show of stupidity. That's all it is. The Patriot missiles don't work either. You know, the F-35s don't work. We don't even have hypersonic missiles. This is not, I mean, they abandoned the whole program not long ago because it's like, it just doesn't work. You just can't make it work. All right, with all that said, now let's go into more bad news from Andy Shachman about the collapse of the dollar that's coming, because, I mean, we're going to live through the end of the American empire here. The dollar's collapsing, the culture's collapsing, the borders have collapsed, right? Supply chains are collapsing, the ethics and morality have collapsed, the population is going down, the military is collapsing, and, you know, of course, the whole fiat currency fiasco, the debt bomb, all of it is also about to implode. So this is how it ends, folks. Just being honest, this is what it looks like. You're watching the end of this chapter of history, and it's a deliberate takedown, by the way. But this is what it looks like. People are going to go completely insane. But let's hear from Andy Shachman from MilesFranklin.com about the dollar. I'm going to play for you a few minutes of our interview with him. I don't know, maybe 20 minutes or so. And then you can hear the rest of the interview coming up in a future episode on Decentralize.tv with my co-host, Todd Pittner. So enjoy this segment and just understand there's more, but you'll have to wait till later on when we publish that episode. Enjoy. Welcome to today's episode of Decentralized TV. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighttown.com, which carries Decentralized TV. My co-host is Todd Pittner, who'll join us in a second with today's featured guest, who is Andy Shachman of Miles Franklin. Andy Shachman is one of the best communicators, most knowledgeable people in the world when it comes to global finance. And he was the one who sounded the alarm about the BRICS currency that was in play and in production. It's about to be announced, it seems, by, well, maybe 80 plus nations around the world that seem to have interest in doing something other than using the dollar. So, Mr. Andy Shachman, welcome to the show. And Todd Pittner, welcome. It's going to be an amazing show. Great to have you both on.
Hola. Thanks for having me, Mike. Good to meet you, Todd, and it's an honor to be here, Mike. So looking forward to the discussion.
Oh, it's going to be red hot on fire, I can tell you, now that you're here, Andy. So Todd, this is the first time you're getting a chance to meet Andy Shachman, correct?
It is. I feel like I know you because I've watched so many of your YouTube videos, especially leading up to this. And yeah, Mike, pre-call, you called him the shot caller, so you can explain that a little bit about BRICS.
Yeah, well, Andy Shachman, if you don't mind me just doing a little intro for you, Andy. So not only are you the CEO of MilesFranklin.com, you have, you know, long history in precious metals, retailing gold and silver and a few other instruments related to that, but you were the first one that I remember hearing warning about the coming BRICS currency system for international clearing of transactions between nations that would challenge the global dollar hegemony. And now that has just come out in spades. So Andy, you have been proven correct again and again. You want to just kind of start off with that?
Yeah, sure. You know, I appreciate the kind words, of course. I stumbled across this starting in 2019, and since late 2019 through today, I've done north of 1,200 videos, almost every single one specifically dealing with the BRICS and the ramifications of de-dollarization and the global accumulation of gold. And, you know, I think you don't have to be overly astute, Mike, to see the crumbs that are being left. You just have to want to see them. You have to look. And of course, you have to listen to people like yourself. And I hope, you know, I guess the term alternative media really, it should be called media. The media that we see on TV should be called fake news or news that is biased to a point that doesn't tell us anything. So in order to really see what's happening in the world, you have to dig, you have to research. And if your life is, in terms of how you get your news, is characterized by what you see on TV, even Fox News, you're going to be solely misinformed and you're not going to be able to get out of the way of what's coming. So it's been an interesting run, and things are developing faster than I ever would have thought, Mike. So I'm excited to dig into it with you.
That's a really important point, that things are moving, in fact, much faster than some of what you warned about. And also, I want to say thank you. I think you put in a word for us with Robert Kiyosaki, who we had on the show. I want to thank you for that. He's just an extraordinary man, and he gets it. He totally gets it. He came on the show showing the dollar. He said, "This is toilet paper." And he says, I don't invest in anything that governments can print." Right, Todd? Wasn't it great to have Kiyosaki on as well?
He was fantastic.
Well, and Kiyosaki,
he's turned into a good friend. He's a great guy.
He really is. He's a great American, too. I mean, just a real patriot, what he's done for the country. But he has you on as a regular guest, and he speaks so highly of you because you get this more than anyone else. And so let me start off with this question. The speed of de-dollarization could surprise us because it's like, especially in trading oil around the world, but other commodities as well, you know, aluminum, copper, whatever, grain, fertilizer. Every nation can make a choice, can make a different choice tomorrow. They don't have to use the dollar if there's an alternative that is less politically risky for them, right?
Absolutely. But I think the term or the phrase politically risky, another way of saying that is getting all of the ducks in a row to be able to offer something legitimate. I guess what I really mean by that is, you know, everyone's focusing on the BRICS, myself included. It's a big deal. The formation of the BRICS alliance is massive. But what started me down this path was the Belt Road Initiative, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, gold being reclassified Tier 1. But more than anything, it was paying attention to what was happening with Saudi Arabia and our relations with them. And to ignore Saudi Arabia when you talk about the BRICS is really only focusing on one half of the story. And you're right. The dollar hegemony really has come at the heels of protecting the Saudi kingdom and the deal that was struck in 1974 between the Saudi kingdom and Kissinger, where he said, "Hey, we're going to protect you, but for that protection, you're going to value oil in dollars globally." And it's been that way for 50 years. And that's created a synthetic demand for the dollar where, you know, the dollar may not have been demanded if it weren't for the fact that you must hold it and accumulate it and stockpile it in order to buy energy. And it's been that way really since 1974. When I really started to pay attention to this was the day we left Afghanistan, and in a way that even if you aren't a former service man or woman, or even if you're not the most patriotic person in the world, if you just grew up in this country, you understand that the way that we left Afghanistan was an embarrassment. We're never supposed to leave anyone behind, and yet we left over 2,000 Americans behind enemy lines. And it was an embarrassment to see how it happened with people hanging from a transport plane. Well, the day after that, and there was no coincidence in this announcement, Saudi Arabia signed a joint military cooperation agreement with Russia. The day after that, Nigeria did the same thing. And the day after that, Russia and Putin announced to the world that his nuclear submarines were outfitted with hypersonic ICBMs. And that's what I mean by getting your ducks in a row. That was their way of saying, hey, don't even think of doing what you did to Gaddafi and to Saddam Hussein. Mm. This isn't going to work. And so
hold on, Andy,
getting in a row.
Before you continue, what you just said, our audience needs to understand, you're saying Saudi Arabia is essentially declaring to the U.S. State Department, don't you dare do what you did to Gaddafi. What our viewers need to make sure they understand is that the United States destroyed Libya and assassinated Gaddafi and did the same thing in Iraq over oil being sold or even being attempted to be sold in things other than dollars. So I just want to make sure Correct. That people understand.
Correct. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it was a way for the world to understand that this was serious, that they meant business. And we should come back at as we go through this to Iraq and the way that we went about that. We can talk about that a little bit later. But as time has gone on, since I started digging into this, the acceleration and in particular of Saudi Arabia's movements and relationships has really grown. Let's just talk about a couple of them. Subsequently to or since they've signed this agreement, they have formally applied to BRICS, and they are expected to be announced as a full-fledged member at the meeting in Johannesburg, August 22nd. They have also applied to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Now, in every single video, almost everyone anyway, that I've done on this topic, I would always talk about a few other groups, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Eurasian Economic Union. And the reason I would bring them into the fold when I would talk about the BRICS was the fact that there was a lot of symmetry amongst membership in these groups, where Russia's in all of them and China's in several of them. And now Saudi Arabia, who along with every other OPEC country on the planet is on the Belt Road Initiative. They have formally applied to BRICS. They have formally applied to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And let's not understate the significance of that. It is the largest regional military and financial organization in the world. I mean, you got the Chinese army right there standing behind you. And they have also joined and applied to the BRICS New Development Bank. And maybe even most alarming was their admission at Davos a few months back, where they told everyone that, hey, we are open to listening to other countries who want to pay for oil in other currencies.
Uh-huh.
So as you can see, not only are they moving away, but they are positioning themselves, in essence, being protected by two of the three largest nuclear arsenals in the world. And this
with
is
hypersonic
what I mean.
Missiles, too.
Yes. And you often talk about something called Operation Sandman, which I've got a lot of mileage off of, and I always give you credit for it. Every single time I talk about Mike Adams talks about Operation Sandman. And in my mind, that is exactly what I have seen for a very long time, but not until the ducks are in a row, where countries say, hey, okay, we're no longer going to take dollars for oil, so let's dump our dollars. And that is when the rubber meets the road as far as the effects and the ramifications of this union, and really the end of Bretton Woods II, the petrodollar, and into the new system, Bretton Woods III, which is a system backed by commodities and transparency, which we can talk about as well.
Wow. How's that, Todd, for just sort of an introduction overload drinking from a fire hose of geopolitics and finance?
You remember that Bose commercial where the guy's sitting in his chair and
he's getting blasted?
Yeah, that's me right now. Andy Scheckman. So your Miles Franklin Precious Metals, right? That's milesfranklin.com, just to let everybody
that's
know
correct.
That. Is the global monetary reset already underway, Andy? And if so, can you share who you believe are the puppet masters orchestrating this controlled demolition?
And well, that's an interesting question, because I've been going down a rabbit hole lately, asking a question: was this intended? I know that's a big statement, and that's a big thing to say, but you know, let's just talk basics. And before we get into who may or who may not be pulling the strings, let's talk about the lead economic advisor for the United States government, for the Biden administration, is a man named Jared Bernstein. Jared Bernstein is a fellow who has a degree in music, a master's degree in social work, and in inequality. He's someone who has no formal training in education anyway, on economics. He did spend some time in the Obama administration, but he is now the chief economic advisor for the White House. And his premise, his theory, and he's written about this on several occasions that have been picked up in the New York Times and in the Washington Post, the most famous being Dethrone King Dollar, where he talks about the fact that the dollar, that the exorbitant privilege that the United States has in being the world reserve currency is something that we can no longer afford, that we should take active steps in shedding the world reserve status because it creates imbalances in trade, it creates distortions, it creates problems for the issuer of the world reserve currency. He's very adamant about this. And, you know, if you wanted to destroy the dollar's reserve status, the first two things you would do would be to weaponize the dollar. And we did that. Mm-hmm. We, you know, as the world reserve currency, you shouldn't be able to tell people or countries who can and who cannot use it. And that brings me back to Iraq. You know, we go into Iraq under the guise of weapons of mass destruction. We destroy the country. We topple the leadership. And, oh, sorry, we didn't find any, and everything's okay. And so the hypocrisy that the world looks at us as being very hypocritical, that is the rallying cry, I believe, or it's what is creating the acceleration in the de-dollarization. And the second thing you would do would be to antagonize and push back against the Saudi kingdom. That is the linchpin of the hegemony. And what did Biden do right away when he stepped into office? He signed an executive order that we're going to be green. I think it was 50% by 2030 and over 85% by 2050. So if you're the Saudis and you see a weaponizing of the dollar, you see a weaponizing of the dollar. You see the United States saying, hey, you know, we're really, we thank you, but we're going green. And so we're going to start to minimize the amount of oil and the attention we pay to this relationship.
And then Andy, don't forget also then the weaponization of the SWIFT system against Russia and the seizing of Russia's Western denominated assets in Western central banks, right? So
that's exactly it. That is what got the ball rolling. And that they didn't just sanction, they actually confiscated the assets and are using it to rebuild the Ukraine. So when you talk about weaponization of the dollar and antagonization of the Saudi kingdom, pushing back against them. Well, those would be the two things that I think you would want to do immediately if you wanted to lose the world reserve status and follow Jared Bernstein's plan. So who's behind it? Look, I mean, look at Bill Gates. Look at all the patents he has right now on the new payment system related to a digital currency and the ID 2020 and the combination of your health records, your bank accounts, the ability to pay with Visa, all of these things. You know, you're looking at some of the wealthiest people in the world, like Bill Gates, like the World Bank, that are certainly, I think, their fingerprints are all over this. And, you know, I don't know that we'll ever know who really is pulling the strings, but I will tell you that if you take a step back and you look at the fact that the BIS reclassified gold as the world's only other tier one reserve asset, and in the same breath told everyone that by 2025, every country has to have an operational central bank digital currency. And, you know, you look at, go all the way back to 2010, there was a report by the United Nations who called for the dollar to lose its world reserve status. So, look, there are some powerful people pulling the strings. You know, obviously, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, and excuse my choice of words, but is destroying the dollar kind of the required foreplay to bring in the central bank digital currencies?
Well, I think it is. I think there has to be an event. I really do. And look, the 2022 balance sheet just came out, or the statement of account for the U.S. Government, and it showed a $155 trillion debt. You can Google this. It'll pop right up. $155 trillion in debt. Most of which is owed to the American public. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and government military pensions make up 125 plus trillion if they're being forthright with us. And so keep that in mind as we talk about why I say this, right? So the asset base that the United States has is a sickening $5 trillion, and even a more sickening, the largest asset of the U.S. is student debt, representing over 40% of the asset base. You take that out of the equation, we have just over $3.5 trillion in assets up against $155 trillion in debt. So that's the premise, but the question being, how do you pay that off? And as interest rates go higher, it becomes much more onerous. The Federal Reserve right now has $1 trillion in unrealized losses on their balance sheet, and they continue to raise rates. So this is a crazy game, but here's the deal. How do you pay that off? Well, you can inflate. That's the way that all governments have done, even going all the way back to Roman times when they clipped the edges of coins. And that's why there are ridges on coins right now, so that you can't counterfeit the diameter of the coin. You can produce your way out. Well, we know that's not going to happen as we've offshored so much of our manufacturing and our productive capacity. You can increase taxes. Don't know how well that's going to go over. Or you can find a villain. And when I started to feel this way, Mike, was when, if you've studied Austrian economics for 5 minutes, you know that inflation is always a monetary event. It's an increase in the money supply. We printed more money in the last 4 years than in the history of the United States prior to it, creating massive distortions and misallocations. And Biden gets up on stage and says it's Putin's inflation. And I'm like, damn it, they're looking for a villain. That is not true. They're looking for a villain. So option number four, find a villain. And you antagonize Saudi Arabia, you weaponize the dollar and the SWIFT system, and you make everyone in the world think, hey, maybe we're next. Where you end up on the wrong side of the U.S. and their agenda, they'll do this to us too. And I think it's much easier to blow up the system by doing this, because what would happen if Saudi Arabia, who stood on a podium with all of the other 13 OPEC countries on the Belt Road, with their arms around the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the members of the BRICS and the Eurasian Economic Union, this is 85 to 90% of human population, and they're not going green. And they sit with their arms around each other and say to the U.S., hey, thank you so much. We're here with our brothers and sisters, all of us that are OPEC producers, and our new union of countries that are joining together that aren't going green, and we respect what you've done for us. And this would be a real nice way of them saying it, but hey, we're no longer going to take dollars for oil. And not only that, in the back of their mind, they're thinking, well, they're inflating the currency. The bond market has been a wreck. Why do we want to attach our wagon to a country that is moving away from our what gives us our standard of living? They've signed executive orders proving that. They've weaponized the dollar. They'll do it against us too. So now that we're being protected by two of the three largest nuclear arsenals in the world and 85% of human population, we're no longer going to take oil or dollars for oil. And maybe it's the new BRICS settlement currency. Maybe it's the yuan, whatever it is. Your Operation Sandman moment right there, when everyone dumps dollars just like
that. Yeah, exactly. What people need to understand, I mean, that was an excellent explanation, but the history of dollar dominance over the world is it's tied to the projection of military power, right? So if we didn't have the post-World War II military that could run around the world and threaten everybody and actually make good on those threats, like we saw with Libya and Iraq and so on, and many other countries, then the dollar would not be the current world reserve currency, as you well know. So the failure of the United States in Afghanistan is one thing that you pointed out, but I'm watching the failure of the United States in Ukraine as well. And if that ends in embarrassment for the United States, which it looks like it is, the so-called counteroffensive against Russia has failed again and again and again. The United States has run out of ammunition, run out of artillery units. Ukraine's sadly running out of men who have been unfairly exploited by the West. And it looks to me like the U.S. is going to have to run away in shame, and that's going to cause these other BRICS, BRICS adjacent nations, let's say, to say to themselves, well, look, the U.S. military is even weaker than we thought. They can't protect us. Russia's got hypersonic missiles.
Right.
China's got hypersonic missiles. China's building aircraft carriers. They can patrol the Pacific. And Russia's got the most powerful land war machine on the planet, as we just saw. We're gonna hitch our horse to Russia and China is what they're, I mean, I'm saying the same thing you're saying, but I'm just bringing in the fact that the military projection of power is what causes a currency to be accepted throughout history, right?
Correct. And there's no coincidence that they are building the BRICS Naval Alliance, which is, it's interesting, the countries that are being brought together for this naval alliance, such as Saudi Arabia and Iran. Well, I didn't think they liked each other, except China brokered a peace deal between them recently where they're now building embassies in each other's country. Wow. We also have Iraq, but I didn't think Iran and Iraq liked each other, except China brokered another deal where they've just built the first ever railway between the two countries. So the countries that are building this new naval alliance are Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Oman, Qatar, India. You know, you're putting all of these countries together in the respect that, look, my enemy's enemy is my friend. The rallying cry is breaking free from just that, the not only the hegemony, but also that military type of influence. Instead of coming in and using coercion and bullying people into doing things, the way that this alliance is working is that China, as an example, with the Belt Road, they're going into all of these countries and they are industrializing them. They are building railways and bridges and maritime channels. They're building oil refineries and gold mines and silver mines. And they are helping these countries bring their goods, their commodities to the market while building industrialization and industrializing their and modernizing their infrastructure, and then giving them a seat at the table to this new growing union. And when you talk about how bad it would be, I mean, look, France was right there with us in 2022 putting on these sanctions against Russia. And, you know, Macron just got back recently from visiting Xi Jinping. He struck a 51-point agreement with trade agreement with China, ranging from 5G to military engagement. And they just paid for a massive liquid natural gas deal, paying in yuan. This is France. So we're getting to a point where even our allies, Mexico, has joined or applied to BRICS. So our allies, our people who we could count on, United Arab Emirates, Turkey, you know, these countries are choosing sides. And appreciate it, guys. Have a good weekend. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Andy. Bye-bye.